Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings, which you will listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second part, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now, prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. You will hear an interview with Terry Jones, an Oxford graduate and a well-known actor, writer and director. For statements 1 to 7, choose the correct answer A, B, C or D. There is always only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part one.
Terry Jones is an actor, writer and a director, and in the following interview he will mainly recall his student's life at Oxford. Why did you apply to Oxford?
Originally I wanted to go to Cambridge because I thought they were more up to date in modern poetry, which I was interested in. The other universities I had applied to turned me down because of my bad A-level results. So I went for an interview in Cambridge, did the entrance exam, and they offered me a place on their reserve list. Then I did the exam and interview for Oxford. I remember the atmosphere of Teddy Hall and I thought, I know I'm going to come here. They offered me a place and I accepted it.
What sort of student were you?
Very keen but hopeless at languages. We had to do Old English and Latin. So I think one of my college tutors thought I wasn't working. I also remember some famous people giving a lecture at our college. For example, J.R.R. Tolkien. The room was packed when he was there. He started off reading with great excitement and then he stopped, pulled out his handkerchief and, amid great laughter, put his false teeth in.
Who were your contemporaries?
Notably Michael Rudman, who became a director with the National Theatre, and David Orkin. They helped revive the John Oldham Society, the college drama group, and in fact gave me my start. We did Chekhov's drama and spent 2 terms rehearsing. We used to stay up a week after term, then a week or two before the start of the next term, so it was like going to drama school.
How did your acting progress?
In my second year, our drama group, including a band, was going to the Edinburgh Festival with a performance that was directed by Ian Davison. I had only small parts until then, and I was mainly designing posters. Suddenly, I got a call from Ian if I'd take a major role. Paul McDowell used to sing with the group. He had several hits, and he was going on tour with us. So it was thanks to Paul that I got into show business. I've still got a programme for that performance, which I designed. Afterwards, things progressed really well. When I came back for my last year at Oxford, having performed on the West End stage, suddenly I was in great demand.
What did Oxford do for you?
I made friends who've remained with me all my life, but it's also such a privilege to live amongst beautiful buildings and have 3 years where you could explore things. I don't know whether it's the same now, whether everyone is so focused on a career, but I was able to explore acting and performing, and also journalism and design. And by the end of those years, I knew what I wanted to do, to write and act. Now, listen again.
Terry Jones is an actor, writer, and a director, and in the following interview, he will mainly recall his student's life at Oxford. Why did you apply to Oxford?
Originally, I wanted to go to Cambridge because I thought they were more up to date in modern poetry, which I was interested in. The other universities I had applied to turned me down because of my bad A-level results. So I went for an interview in Cambridge, did the entrance exam, and they offered me a place on their reserve list. Then I did the exam and interview for Oxford. I remember the atmosphere of Teddy Hall and I thought, I know I'm going to come here. They offered me a place and I accepted it.
What sort of student were you?
Very keen but hopeless at languages. We had to do Old English and Latin, so I think one of my college tutors thought I wasn't working. I also remember some famous people giving a lecture at our college, for example, J.R.R. Tolkien. The room was packed when he was there. He started off reading with great excitement, and then he stopped, pulled out his handkerchief, and, amid great laughter, put his false teeth in.
Who were your contemporaries?
Notably Michael Rudman, who became a director with the National Theatre, and David Orkin. They helped revive the John Oldham Society, the college drama group, and in fact gave me my start. We did Chekhov's drama and spent 2 terms rehearsing. We used to stay up a week after term, then a week or two before the start of the next term, so it was like going to drama school.
How did your acting progress?
In my second year, our drama group, including a band, was going to the Edinburgh Festival with a performance that was directed by Ian Davison. I had only small parts until then, and I was mainly designing posters. Suddenly, I got a call from Ian if I'd take a major role. Paul McDowell used to sing with the group. He had several hits, and he was going on tour with us. So it was thanks to Paul that I got into show business. I've still got a programme for that performance, which I designed. Afterwards, things progressed really well. When I came back for my last year at Oxford, having performed on the West End stage, suddenly I was in great demand.
What did Oxford do for you?
I made friends who've remained with me all my life, but it's also such a privilege to live amongst beautiful buildings and have 3 years where you could explore things. I don't know whether it's the same now, whether everyone is so focused on a career, but I was able to explore acting and performing, and also journalism and design. And by the end of those years, I knew what I wanted to do, to write and act. Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. You will hear a true story of Christine Maskell, who became unemployed but did not give up. For statements 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 2.
You will hear a true story about Christine Maskell, aged 55, who became unemployed but did not give up. Christine Maskell lives in New York and is divorced. Now she will tell us her story.
When I received a letter saying I'd been made redundant, I was shocked. I couldn't imagine not working, and with bills, a mortgage, and a son at university, I couldn't afford not to. I am divorced, so I didn't have a partner to rely on. I had always worked, but at 55, and with the economic recession, I was worried about finding another job. I loved the job I'd lost too. I'd been an executive director for a government-funded company called Providers in Partnership, and I was responsible for 24 training providers in the North Yorkshire area. Every day was different. I travelled around the country to meetings, assisted with training days, and was in charge of budgets. Then, last Christmas, the company lost its funding and couldn't afford to operate without it. It was a scary time. I lost weight and often woke up in the night, worrying about where the money was going to come from. I was willing to put my hand to anything, but was limited to what I could apply for because of my financial resources. Each month, I cut back as much as I could, but my mortgage was a constant worry. A friend suggested going self-employed, and, because I was desperate, I agreed to look into it. I contacted BusinessLink and was amazed at the level of support they offered to people setting up on their own. I didn't have large amounts of savings, but I discussed this with a BusinessLink advisor, and they gave me a list of options of potentially successful jobs. Selling a service instead of a product was the obvious option, and that meant I could work from home with just the cost of setting up a website and printing business cards. I decided to offer a review service for company's customer service and would provide advice on how they could improve. I think it is crucial for boosting business during a recession. I never realized there was so much help out there. I probably would have done it sooner if I'd known. I miss the security of a monthly salary, but I am excited about my future and I am determined to make it a success.
Now, listen again.
You will hear a true story about Christine Maskell, aged 55, who became unemployed but did not give up. Christine Maskell lives in New York and is divorced. Now she will tell us her story.
When I received a letter saying I'd been made redundant, I was shocked. I couldn't imagine not working. And with bills, a mortgage, and a son at university, I couldn't afford not to. I am divorced, so I didn't have a partner to rely on. I had always worked, but at 55, and with the economic recession, I was worried about finding another job. I loved the job I'd lost too. I'd been an executive director for a government-funded company called Providers in Partnership, and I was responsible for 24 training providers in the North Yorkshire area. Every day was different. I travelled around the country to meetings, assisted with training days, and was in charge of budgets. Then, last Christmas, the company lost its funding and couldn't afford to operate without it. It was a scary time. I lost weight and often woke up in the night, worrying about where the money was going to come from. I was willing to put my hand to anything, but was limited to what I could apply for because of my financial resources. Each month, I cut back as much as I could, but my mortgage was a constant worry. A friend suggested going self-employed, and, because I was desperate, I agreed to look into it. I contacted BusinessLink and was amazed at the level of support they offered to people setting up on their own. I didn't have large amounts of savings, but I discussed this with a BusinessLink advisor and they gave me a list of options of potentially successful jobs. Selling a service instead of a product was the obvious option, and that meant I could work from home with just the cost of setting up a website and printing business cards. I decided to offer a review service for company's customer service and would provide advice on how they could improve. I think it is crucial for boosting business during a recession. I never realized there was so much help out there. I probably would have done it sooner if I'd known. I miss the security of a monthly salary, but I am excited about my future and I am determined to make it a success.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Now look at part 3. For part 3, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part 3. You will hear a radio programme about stressful situations and ways to cope with them. Listen to 6 pieces of advice. Below, you can read the information 14 to 20, which is in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing a number 1 to 6 next to the number that indicates the information. Be careful. There is one extra piece of information. Put X next to the number indicating extra information. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part three.
We can't avoid all situations which are stressful or inconvenient, even though they are caused by us. But we can learn ways of getting better control of our minds and habits. Listen to 6 specific situations and 6 pieces of advice from our experts about how to sidestep the problem.
Situation number one. You are racing to get out the door and you can't find your car keys. This sort of silly and irritating mistake is commonly associated with actions we do all the time, such as switching off the iron. Because we do them so often, our brain doesn't even register the action, so we create a blank. Advice number one. Eliminate chance. It sounds obvious, but have a memory pot, or basket, or shelf, near the front door to store the stuff you need every day. Remember to always put small but important things there. Situation number two. A friend calls, asking you to help her or him with a project for work or school. But it's Saturday. You need to relax and are reluctant to give a hand. Advice number two. Try to be polite but assertive. A response like this might be appropriate. I'd love to, but I can't manage it the way things are at present. Can I get back to you if things change? That gives you valuable breathing space to consider if you can offer your friend some help next time. Situation number three. Your to-do list is endless. If you never get to tick everything off, could it be that you are servicing other people's lives rather than your own? Advice number three. Work weekly, not daily. On Monday, ask yourself what your 3 main goals are for the week. Break down each goal into small steps. And then schedule these into your diary. You still may not get everything done, but you will have the satisfaction of knowing what is most important to you. Situation number four. Everything is going well, but you still feel irritable. People tend to underestimate the effects of their environment. Bad lighting, a congested home, negative people around, all of these problems trigger the release of stress hormones. Advice number four. Eliminate sources of hidden stress, such as flickering lights or a permanently on TV, and gradually work towards creating a more restful environment. Try to be surrounded by people who think positively. Situation number five. You've responded in a wrong way for no reason, and it's turned into a real argument with your friend. You feel you have been unfair to him or her. Advice number five. try to identify for yourself the source of discomfort in the first place. Then try to resume a conversation with your friend in a calm way and admit that the wrong tone of your previous discussion was your fault. You will clear the way for a calm and friendly debate. Situation number 6. You are just about to cry, but you don't know why. Tears of frustration tend to be more common when we literally don't stop all day. Advice number 6. Follow the 90-10 rule. Research shows that after about 90 minutes of any activity, we lose concentration and the ability to move further. We become less productive, which is our body's signal to change task. Instead of rushing into another task, take 10 minutes to allow yourself to switch gear.
Now listen again.
We can't avoid all situations which are stressful or inconvenient, even though they are caused by us. But we can learn ways of getting better control of our minds and habits. Listen to 6 specific situations and 6 pieces of advice from our experts about how to sidestep the problem.
Situation number 1. You are racing to get out the door and you can't find your car keys. This sort of silly and irritating mistake is commonly associated with actions we do all the time, such as switching off the iron. Because we do them so often, our brain doesn't even register the action, so we create a blank. Advice number 1. Eliminate chance. It sounds obvious, but have a memory pot, or basket, or shelf, near the front door to store the stuff you need every day. Remember to always put small but important things there. Situation number 2. A friend calls, asking you to help her or him with a project for work or school. But it's Saturday, you need to relax, and are reluctant to give a hand. Advice number 2. Try to be polite but assertive. A response like this might be appropriate. I'd love to, but I can't manage it the way things are at present. Can I get back to you if things change? That gives you valuable breathing space to consider if you can offer your friend some help next time. Situation number 3. Your to-do list is endless. If you never get to tick everything off, could it be that you are servicing other people's lives rather than your own? Advice number 3. Work weekly, not daily. On Monday, ask yourself what your 3 main goals are for the week. Break down each goal into small steps, and then schedule these into your diary. You still may not get everything done, but you will have the satisfaction of knowing what is most important to you. Situation number 4. Everything is going well, but you still feel irritable. People tend to underestimate the effects of their environment. Bad lighting, a congested home, negative people around, all of these problems trigger the release of stress hormones. Advice number 4. Eliminate sources of hidden stress, such as flickering lights or a permanently on TV, and gradually work towards creating a more restful environment. Try to be surrounded by people who think positively. Situation number 5. You've responded in a wrong way for no reason, and it's turned into a real argument with your friend. You feel you have been unfair to him or her. Advice number 5. Try to identify for yourself the source of discomfort in the first place. Then try to resume a conversation with your friend in a calm way and admit that the wrong tone of your previous discussion was your fault. You will clear the way for a calm and friendly debate. Situation number 6. You are just about to cry, but you don't know why. Tears of frustration tend to be more common when we literally don't stop all day. Advice number 6. Follow the 90-10 rule. Research shows that after about 90 minutes of any activity, we lose concentration and the ability to move further. We become less productive, which is our body's signal to change task. Instead of rushing into another task, take 10 minutes to allow yourself to switch gear.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.